25 years ago this month, one film and one filmmaker became synonymous with the big plot twist.
I see dead people.
Now, after all this time, if you still have not seen The Sixth Sense, we're not going to ruin it for you. But it's no spoiler to say that the film became a phenomenon, and its director, M. Night Shyamalan, an overnight sensation. His career has had some up and down since then. He currently has a film out called Trap. But it was his breakthrough film that reimagined the psycho thriller. As part of our ongoing look at how the films of 1999 changed movie making, we take a closer look at The Sixth Sense and its then young star, Haley Joel Osment, who grew up in the shadow of the movie's success. He spoke with All Things Considered co-host Scott Detrow.
It's such an intense performance, and I just rewatched it last night and was still terrified by it, even though I've seen it so many times over the years now. Do you remember what the initial conversations with M. Night Shyamalan or others about just kind of how you were approaching and thinking about this kid were?
Yeah, and one of the luxuries that we had doing this movie, and it's a really rare luxury, especially these days, was weeks of rehearsal and conversations with, you know, me and Knight, and my dad would go off and have conversations together, and then me and Knight and Bruce would meet. All these small groups of discussions, then leading into rehearsals and hanging out in the spaces where we'd be shooting the film. And that just really was a great opportunity to get into the feel and the tone and the atmosphere of the project. And I think I remember the very first conversation I had with Knight in his office after getting to Philadelphia was him being very adamant that this would be, you know, I don't even know if he called it a horror movie, but he's like, in horror movies, someone's walking down a dark hallway and there's a scare because a hand grabs him on the shoulder, but oh, it was just their friend. He's like, we're not going to be doing things like that in this movie. We're not going to have cheap scares. It's all going to be coming out of real behavior. And I think that set a really good tone for us. Yeah. And one of the best things my dad said to me when I was, you know, rehearsing for the audition was saying, this is a movie about communication, not a movie about ghosts. And that's where I think the real horror and emotion comes from, is there's no greater fear than not being able to communicate with the people you love.
Right. I mean, this isn't an original observation, but I was thinking about it so much watching it last night before I talked to you that I feel like so much of the power of your performance comes from really subtle facial expressions and really subtle eye movement, just the way that this kid feels a ghost presence or gets frightened or becomes very vulnerable. Like these little movements go such a long way. Was that something that was actively part of those conversations about how to approach this?
I think a lot of it just came naturally. I mean, it's all part of Knight's brilliant direction, but the environment we were shooting in was this, I think it's gone now, but it was the old Philadelphia Convention Center, which had been abandoned except for film productions. And even a studio film like this seemed dwarfed by this, you know, cavernous space with these hallways that kind of looked like when Bruce comes above ground in 12 Monkeys and everything's covered in spider webs and everything. Yeah. So it was a great kind of haunted house environment to shoot in. And then there were these repeated scenes where we'd drape the set in tarps and then pump in cold air so that you could see our breath. This was not a time when people were using CGI for that effect. It was really a freezing temperature. And so something like that with great material and having, you know, spent a lot of time rehearsing it, a lot of these decisions really came naturally. But a lot of these shots that I think you're referring to, the camera's right up in my face. So there's really no question of whether it's going to capture all the subtleties and feelings, and you know, as an actor, you really don't have to think about projecting that or showing that stuff. As long as you're feeling it, the camera is going to capture it.
There has been a lot written about how a movie like this can be so successful. It kind of traps people in a certain way. Like, I think with him, obviously, the plot twist became a big part of his career and something that's, you know, just incredibly hard to keep up movie to movie to movie. And, you know, you are in the situation that so many other actors have faced, where you're this breakout child star, and then in many ways, people freeze you in their mind at that age. How did you navigate over the years? Because it seems like you did it in a way that worked for you really well.
Yeah, I feel very lucky to have been able to play all these different roles that I've done. And yeah, that is something that can happen when you're part of a project that is a big hit like this one, and if you're a kid, like you are kind of frozen in people's minds at that age. And I guess career-wise, that can be a challenge. But as an actor, it can be an opportunity because you can find all these ways to, you know, camouflage yourself. Or, you know, one of the most gratifying things you can have happen as an actor is people go like, oh, I didn't realize that was you in something, you know, which is, I think, actors get a kick out of. So I'm 36 now, and I feel like, you know, all these new opportunities for roles are opening up to me because of my age. I was, you know, able to play so many different types of roles. And now I've never been afraid of getting older because it's just, it broadens the horizons of the different types of characters you can play. And if you've had experiences like I've had with these movies when I was 10 or 12 years old, it's always kind of playing off of those expectations that people have. And that's something that can, I don't know, it kind of motivates you as an actor.
I'm going to try hard to continue our streak of not spoiling anything.
We've done a really good job.
Yeah, I'm proud of us. So this is the most challenging question on that front. What do you think all these years later, what do you think the most powerful scene is?
That's really hard. I mean, there's the most famous scene with me and Bruce.
Yeah.
But I just statistically, the scene that people would come up to me and want to talk about to this back then and to this day is the scene with me and Tony in the car at the end.
Oh, yeah.
When I finally reveal what's been going on to her.
I'm ready to communicate with you now.
Communicate?
Tell you my secrets?
And Toni Collette is such an amazing, especially like, this is the first time I've seen this movie since I've been a parent, and just the emotion that's coming through is overwhelming.
It's an incredible performance.
You think I'm a freak?
Look at my face. I would never think that about you. Ever. Got it?
I'm curious, you know, we're talking about 25 years and all the different things that mean, and I'm wondering, to put it in the Simpsons terms, 25 years later, do you still deal with people trying to ask you to say the line, and how do you handle that?
That doesn't happen too much
That's
anymore,
good.
But I'm still shocked at how many times I see the line out there. This was a while ago. I remember Tiger Woods rolling down the window of a Buick van in a commercial and saying the line. While I was watching golf on TV, that was a surprise. I remember seeing Yasiel Puig say it on the big screen at Dodger Stadium for some player movie quiz that they did in between innings. Yeah, I mean, the fact that it's on, I believe it's on the AFI list of quotes, right behind Peter Finch's I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. It's a big honor to be attached to something like that.
Haley Joel Osment, it has been wonderful to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming on All Things Considered.
Thanks, man. Great talking to you, too.
You're listening to NPR News. If you have spent even a little bit of time on social media this summer, you have probably seen that meme. You know, the slime green squares and people proudly calling themselves brats.
Excuse me, what's a brat girl summer?
Oh my god, I'm a brat girl summer.
My brat girl summer is wearing wired headphones and listening to Charlie XCX.
I would go as far to say that if you've even looked in the direction of a smartphone, you are aware that it is brat summer. This viral trend that took its name from the latest Charlie XCX album titled Brat. But as summer starts to wind down, we're also seeing a new trend start to emerge on social media. Here to tell us about it is USA Today health and wellness reporter Charles Trepany. Charles, welcome to All Things Considered.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here. And first things first, for anyone who missed Brat Summer, can you just tell us what was this all about?
So having a Brat Summer basically means embracing chaos, embracing your messy side, embracing your wild side. It's about clubbing, partying. When Charlie XCX sort of described what a brat means to her, she said that it can include luxury, it can include trashiness. There's no one right way to be a brat as long as you're sort of living your life and you just don't care what other people think.
Okay, so this meme has gotten a lot of mileage this summer. We're even starting to see kind of a new trend challenge Brat Summer's throne. Can you tell us about what this thing, Demure Fall, is all about?
Yes. So In response to Brat, there is a new trend afoot called being demure. People online are declaring it Demure Fall.
So pretty different vibes.
Yes, completely different vibes. I'd say demure is almost embracing like a quiet competence. It's going through your life with calmness, with gentility, with consideration for others. It's not making waves. It's not drawing attention to yourself. And in a way, that not drawing attention to yourself is the power in being demure. A lot of it is sort of the very basics of just living your day-to-day life, but it casts it in a more graceful, kind of elegant mindset and attitude, basically.
Okay. So these are both kind of delightful in very opposite ways, right? Like Brat is childish and immature. Demure is poised and grown up. But both of these memes are sort of taking up space in the online hive mind. What do you make of that?
Even though they're both very opposite, I think they're kind of reacting to the same sort of feeling in the culture that people are experiencing this year. I think people in general are just feeling a lot of chaos. And what's interesting to me about Brat and Demure is that both of them are sort of different ways of coping or moving through chaos and uncertainty. Brat is embracing it fully, embracing the mess, embracing the wildness. And then Demure, in a way, it's like a more calming way of moving through life. It's really sort of, I think, tuning out the big noise and just focusing on the small things.
So this raises an important question. On the spectrum of Brat to Demure, where are you right now?
Oh my gosh, I go up and down. I think I'm ready for Demure Fall, but I think you have to go through a Brat era before you can truly appreciate being demure.
Oh, okay. I love it.
Yes. What about you, Adrian?
Oh, man. I mean, it depends on how much sleep I've gotten.
Listen, 8 hours of sleep a night is very demure.
Well, I think we have our answer. I've been speaking with USA Today health and wellness reporter Charles Trepany. Charles, thanks again.
Thank you.